Who wants to be the Red Sox manager? We'll tell you about the search for John Farrell's replacement. And sound the alarm, Tom Brady has a shoulder injury. How much will that injury affect Brady and the Patriots on Sunday against the New York Jets? That game's pretty important. It's for first place in the AFC East. It's Thursday, October 12, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Well, manager John is now manager gone. The Red Sox are looking for a new skipper. They fired manager John Farrell on Wednesday morning. There were not a lot of details given by Red Sox president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski. But nonetheless, it must have factored in that the Red Sox were eliminated in the first round of the playoffs in back-to-back seasons after winning 93 games in back-to-back seasons. Now the team has the task of finding someone who can get them beyond the first round of the playoffs and hopefully get them to a World Series. Nick Cafardo, senior baseball writer for the Globe, joins me now. He had a great story in the Globe today breaking down the top 10 candidates and beyond for this job. As I look at this, Nick, I don't see an obvious candidate. Like when Farrell was hired, that was sort of an obvious candidate. He was still under contract to the Blue Jays. They had wanted him when they hired Bobby Valentine. They gave up compensation to get him. I don't see that obvious guy, but am I missing something?
No, I don't think you are. In fact, I had a reader email me today, and he made a great point. He said, you know, the list you had in that story today, there's nobody better than John Farrell on that list. You know, so it's kind of amusing in a way. But, you know, I'm sure Dave Dombrowski, you know, has someone in mind. And Dave, of course, he's a real hands-on GM. He's at every road game. He's in the office with the manager all the time. He sees how the manager operates. He loved Brad Ausmus, even though Ausmus had to go through some growing pains being his first job in Detroit. He seems to be the front runner, but there could be other guys. The list I mentioned and beyond, and I may have left off the guy, you know, who eventually gets the job.
But that speaks to the uncertainty of it. And you mentioned Brad Ausmus, who Dave Dombrowski hired as manager of the Detroit Tigers when Dombrowski was there before he came to Boston. Ausmus was fired by the Tigers this season, so he's certainly available. But you mentioned that history there. Is this a job that is looked at around baseball as one of the plum jobs, or as Dave Dombrowski sort of mentioned the other day, this is a very difficult place to manage?
Yeah, of course it's a plum job. It's the Boston Red Sox, and anybody would love to have this job, but you have to be able to take what comes with it, and that is the scrutiny of talk show callers, talk show hosts, Twitter people. I mean, the whole bit. You have to be able to take all that. So, yeah, it's a great job. The job usually pays a lot of money as well, more than other places. So, yeah, it's a great job. You know, the one thing I'll add here is that most of the time when the Red Sox have fired the manager, they do very well the next year. You know, I mean, Grady Little to Terry Francona, right? Championship in 04. Bobby Valentine to John Farrell, championship in 2013. The only time it didn't happen was with Bobby Valentine. And the one thing there is they didn't accompany the new manager with any kind of a big move. You know, in 04, they got Curt Schilling to help them along to get them to the next level. In 2013, you know, they signed 7 or 8 free agents that all worked out to help John Farrell. So we'll see what happens this time around. I'm assuming they're going to, you know, sign a slugger here.
Yeah, I do want to get to that. What's realistic? You know, is Giancarlo Stanton somebody? We know Dave Dombrowski likes stars. Giancarlo Stanton, the slugger for the Miami Marlins who led the majors in home runs this year, is reportedly on the block with new ownership down in Miami, which includes former Yankees franchise star Derek Jeter. Is that realistic, or is it more realistic with, they say, a J.D. Martinez, the outfielder for the Arizona Diamondbacks, who Dombrowski had before in Detroit?
Yeah, anything is realistic with the Red Sox. They have the resources to be able to do anything, whether it be a trade or a big take on a big salary. You know, they stayed under that luxury tax this year, and it cost them, I think, further on in the playoffs as a result. But next year is a different story. They can spend some money. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, J.D. Martinez is in play as a free agent. Jose Abreu.
I like that guy. That would be my choice.
I agree. That's a great choice.
Yeah, first baseman from the White Sox with some real power from the right side.
Yep. And, you know, I'm sure that they discussed him when they discussed the sale trade last year. Couldn't pull it off, but this time is different. And Giancarlo, you know, I think it's very viable. I mean, what the Marlins want would be, you know, one of Boston's outfielders. So you'd have to be willing to give up a Benintendi, I think, is the guy they want. And then you'd have to be willing to give up a major league ready, controllable pitcher, which could be either Drew Pomeranz or Eduardo Rodriguez. And then you'd have to give him another pitching prospect in your system. And then you have to figure out the money. Do they assume any of the contract? Do you have to assume the entire contract? So that's the other big thing there. But I would love to see that guy here.
So you think he'd be okay in this environment?
Because
I do. There's some sort of thought that this environment, mm-hmm. Much like with the manager, where it's not for everybody in terms of dealing with the media and just the scrutiny of it, that, you know, he's been playing in Miami where it's very mm-hmm. sort of laissez-faire and that he can be a little surly. And that it might not go well here.
Yeah, obviously he has a full no-trade clause, so he can veto any trade that's made. So Boston isn't to his liking. He'd better do a lot of research on Boston, you know, talk to a lot of people about it. What I would hate to see is the Yankees getting Giancarlo and then having that, you know, Giancarlo-Aaron Judge dynamic, you know, in the lineup, which could happen.
Murderer's Row 2.0.
Yeah, because they have... Again, the resources to do it, they have tremendous farm system to be able to unload for him. So, yeah, that's a possibility.
I want to back up a little bit here because I think we gave Dave Dombrowski too much of a pass. Mm-hmm. I thought he was extremely vague and nebulous in that press conference about why he made this decision to move on from John Farrell, who he had praised during the year and obviously decided to extend last year. He was, again, as I mentioned, didn't really go into detail, just said it was time for a change.
You weigh a lot of different things that come into play. You watch day in, day out over a season, and you come up with a decision based upon that. And for me, I think at this point, sometimes change can be better, and that's why we've decided to move forward with the change.
Nick, why did they get rid of John Farrell, and why now?
Yeah, trying to piece that together. You know, again, we talked about the hands-on with Dombrowski. He was with Farrell a lot, you know, especially on the road. You know, he's always in Farrell's office, you know, always kind of seeing how Farrell did things, how he put out fires, how he did that kind of stuff. And where last year I thought that it worked to Farrell's benefit, you know, that Dombrowski was there all the time. This time around, he must have seen something that he didn't like. And there was a sense that perhaps Farrell had lost a little control of the players in the clubhouse a little bit. So I think whoever gets hired, like if Osmus gets hired as the manager, the players are going to know that's Dombrowski's guy. You know, it might take a little while for the players to warm up to that. And obviously there was the cheating thing with the Apple Watch, you know, I mean, you know, John Farrell said he didn't know anything about that. Now, why wouldn't he know that?
He's a manager.
Exactly. So maybe they had some problem with that.
Yeah, I also have to feel that the back-to-back playoff exits definitely didn't help, even though Dombrowski said that wasn't necessarily the reason he was moving on from Farrell.
It's not a snap decision that says, okay, we lost in the postseason. That is not by any means the case. The Houston Astros have a good club. And so that's not the reason.
So here's my question on this, Nick. So they move on from Farrell now. I think this is a year too late. And I'll be honest with you. I look at it and say this. John Farrell did a good job. I don't think John Farrell deserved to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can look at it and say, this guy did a good job, doesn't deserve to be fired. However, on the other hand, I think it's fair to say, if you're Dave Dombrowski, I think I can find someone else who can get more out of this roster. But I think you had that person here in Torrey Lovello.
Mm-hmm.
And they let Torrey Lovello go and join Mike Hazen in Arizona to be with the Diamondbacks, and the Diamondbacks made the playoffs this year. If you weren't sure about Farrell, then you probably should have moved on from him last year and given it to Torrey Lovello, because to me, if Torrey Lovello were available, he would be the slam dunk choice.
Yeah, I mean, I like Torrey a lot. I think he has a lot of great attributes, but he's not a very good in-game manager. You know, he wasn't.
Well, neither was the guy who was just here.
Well, and that's the interesting thing there, because Torrey was the bench coach, and Torrey advised Farrell on in-game moves. So that, you know, and Torrey wasn't very good at it in Arizona. I mean, he's very good with people, with bringing out the best in players and things like that. And listen, you can nitpick every single manager in baseball and every single move they make. And I think what the Red Sox do, I mean, Farrell can always defend everything he does because he has the analytics behind it. He goes strictly by that. And Lavello was the guy who kind of broke down the analytics and gave them to Farrell to make those decisions. But that's what they go by. They don't go by hunch or anything like that. It's just strictly by the numbers. And I wish that the new manager does things a little bit differently.
Occupational hazard of any sports writer predictions. I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you had to predict who the manager will be, and in your piece, there were a ton of names, guys like Gabe Kapler, Alex Cora, who would be my first choice. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys played for the Red Sox in the past. Who's the guy?
I say Brad Ausmus is the guy. You know, I think that familiarity with a guy is very important. It'd be a second job. Usually the second job, they do much better than the first job. We saw that with Terry Francona. And I think that's the guy.
Well, if it's Dave Dombrowski's handpicked guy, I'll tell you what, he can't use John Farrell as a flak jacket anymore. If things don't go well, the focus will be squarely on Dombrowski with his handpicked manager. Nick, thanks. Great stuff as always.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, coming up in just a minute, we're going to switch things over to the Patriots. They take on the rival New York Jets this weekend. Is Tom Brady healthy enough to play? We're going to preview this battle for the top spot in the AFC East. That's next. Welcome back to Season Ticket. A quick note for you guys. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. It's the best way to assure you'll get our show as soon as it's available. All right, let's swing things over to the Patriots here. They have a big division game in the AFC East on Sunday against the New York Jets down in New Jersey at MetLife Stadium, that game at 1 p.m. Surprisingly, both teams have the same record. I don't think anyone saw that coming. They're both 3-2, and they're locked in a three-way tie for first place in the division with the Buffalo Bills. However, the Bills are idle this week. They have their bye week, so the winner of this game will be in first place in the AFC East. I don't think anybody thought that. And adding some intrigue to this game, Tom Brady has a shoulder injury that forced him to miss practice on Tuesday and on Wednesday. To break this down for us, we now bring in Boston Globe Patriots beat writer Jim McBride. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
So first things first, anytime there's a Tom Brady injury, I think that there are alarm bells that go off across New England. This is the one guy you really cannot afford to lose. Luckily, it's a shoulder injury to his non-throwing shoulder. It's his left shoulder, and it's a sprained AC joint. However, it's unusual for Brady, who is maniacal about being out at practice and treats practice like games, and you literally have to drag him off the field. He doesn't want to give practice reps to anybody. For him to miss two practices this week leading up to this game, and I know he said to the media yesterday he's going to play on Sunday, and I believe him. So, Jim, how concerned should we be about this injury to Brady?
I think we should be a little concerned. He's not. He's kind of making light of it. But I think the fact that, you know, like you mentioned, he missed practice time, which is very significant. We thought on Tuesday when he wasn't there, the mini practice or the bonus practice, I should say, coming off the bye week, that maybe wasn't that big a deal. But the fact that he was a DNP on yesterday's practice report after being there in full uniform and in pads, I think there's a little concern. But if I were a betting man, I'd say he's going to be there.
Yeah, I agree with you. He will be there. And Bill Belichick talked about Brady being one of the toughest players mentally and physically that he's ever coached. And you look at Brady, he just doesn't miss time in his career except for 2008 when he literally couldn't play because he couldn't stand. He tore his ACL in the first game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Brady is someone who believes and knows that part of playing quarterback in the NFL is playing through pain. There's no way that he does not want to play in this game. And I do think part of it also is there's no way he wants to open the door for Jimmy Garoppolo. Tom, I think, has always been acutely aware of how he got his job in 2001. It was the franchise quarterback Drew Bledsoe getting hurt against the New York Jets, although that game was in Foxborough. This one's going to be at MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. But he doesn't want to open the door. And also, you know, the team is 3-2, and this is an important game. They built some momentum coming off that Tampa game. But really, to this point in the season, as well as they've played offensively, this has not been the Patriots team we expected.
No, it's much different. I mean, he's taken a beating this year, Tom. No question about it. 16 sacks after being only sacked 15 times last year. Adjusting a little bit to a more vertical offense without Julian Edelman last week without Gronk. So kind of that underneath stuff was taken away. So it's definitely been a work in progress. You know, it's like you had mentioned earlier, it's stunning that the Jets are coming into this game on a three-game winning streak, and the Patriots are the ones where there's question marks all over the place. So it should be interesting. And Tom has made, you know, reference in the past that there's only so many times he's going to be able to go out there and play on Sunday. So he's not going to, you know, miss this game for what is clearly a minor ailment.
Something interesting about their offense this year, Jim, is that maybe the offense itself and the way that they've played has exposed Brady to more hits. They've thrown the ball down the field more. It's been more vertical without Julian Edelman, who really is a safety valve for Tom Brady, a security blanket for Tom Brady, a guy who lets him get rid of the ball quickly. You look at it, pass plays of 20-plus yards this season. The New England Patriots are second in the league offensively in generating those plays. They have 24. Only the Los Angeles Rams have more. With Brady having this injury, are they going to have to sort of abandon what is their new offensive identity, which is throwing the ball down the field?
I don't think so. If it was, you know, if it was an injury to his throwing shoulder, I think that, yeah, they'd have to drastically change it. But where it's to his left shoulder, I think they'll probably stick to the game plan. But if they have to, they do have the personnel to kind of go back to that offense with James White. You know, he can catch 10 to 14 balls in a game. Danny Amendola is another guy who gets open quickly. And, you know, Tom actually called him uncoverable.
You know, you turn on the tape, he's getting away from people. No matter what the route, no matter who's on him, no matter what's called, leverage, distance of the route, he's just been so great for us this year. And, you know, I'm going to try to keep finding him because when you have that kind of trust, and you see it play after play after play, you know, you're the quarterback, you got one ball. You know, it goes to the guy who's open, and Danny's always finding a way to get open.
So I don't think that with this injury they're going to have to change too much, you know. Tom's kind of taken on a lot of the blame himself, saying that maybe he's held onto the ball a little too long this year, and I think he's had to because those downfield threats have to have time to get open.
Yeah, it takes longer on those routes for guys to uncover. One thing that would certainly help Brady would be the running game, and they got that going a little bit against Tampa Bay. Can they get that going against the Jets? You look at it, the Jets coming into this game, rush defense, they haven't been very good, 143 yards a game. Is this the week where they really ramp up that running game?
I think so. I mean, Tom's mentioned several times that they got to achieve that balance that is so elusive to a lot of offenses. They certainly have the personnel. They have four running backs that can move the ball. I think the biggest encouraging sign was Deion Lewis's play last Thursday against Tampa Bay.
Oh, can use Deion Lewis still? I didn't know. It seems like they had mothballed him.
Yeah, and I think he was a little frustrated by that, a rare show of emotion from Deion a couple weeks ago when reporters talked to him saying, yeah, he was frustrated. But he showed flashes of 2015 Deion in that game Thursday night, one long run. He's a guy that I think he needs to find a rhythm, and they got to give him the ball more to find that rhythm. He's not one of these guys that can bend cold and just, you know, light things up. So I think as we move forward in the season, you're going to see more and more of Deion as he gets comfortable and he gets stronger. I mean, that was significant knee injury he had, a couple of surgeries, so it takes a long time to get up to speed, and I think we're finally seeing Deion up to speed.
You know, one thing you never want to do in journalism is bury the lead. I don't think we did that because Brady was the lead, but if there's a co-lead, it's probably the defense. I think this is a little bit of a no-win for them against the Jets. If they play really well, people are going to say, well, it's Josh McCown, who's just this journeyman quarterback who's now the starter for the Jets. He's just a placeholder until they can find a real quarterback. So if they play well, they're going to say, well, it's just the Jets. If they get lit up like they have in other games, then people are going to say, well, look at this defense. They got lit up by Josh McCown and a Jets offense that is not really that potent. That's 25th in the NFL in passing offense. What do you need to see from the defense on Sunday, Jim, where you can walk away and say, okay, they're continuing that progress from the Buccaneers game?
I think they need to be more versatile. You know, if they have to switch to zone at certain times, they have to be comfortable doing that. And, you know, clearly in the secondary there were problems, you know, up until the Tampa Bay game when they kind of, I don't want to say simplify it, but I guess that's probably the best word, where they simplified the coverages. In order to be effective against a lot of other teams in this league, they're going to have to be more versatile. And I think that begins with communication, and I think the fact that Hightower's back and he's playing, you know, multiple positions, that really helps a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is an important game for the Patriots, not just because of first place, but Patriots coach Bill Belichick has a little bit of a history with the Jets. He was there as an assistant. He was briefly the head coach of the Jets. And when I say briefly, I mean briefly, as in never coached a game and resigned on a napkin. So if there's one team that Bill does not want to lose to, he never likes to lose, obviously. But, man, it's a tough week for these guys if they lose to the Jets. So big game for the Patriots on Sunday. Jim, thanks for coming in here on Season Ticket and helping us break it down.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Finally, a segment we call the Cheap Seats. It's become clear that football trumps the First Amendment in the NFL. NFL owners like Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys and Stephen Ross of the Miami Dolphins, they've issued edicts forcing their players to stand for the national anthem and to end the protest with players sitting or kneeling during the anthem to protest social justice. Now, Jones said any player on his team who doesn't stand won't be allowed to play. Then NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell had a league-wide memo that went out this week that said the league believes players should stand. By railing against the league and painting it as unpatriotic, Donald Trump has hit the owners in the NFL where it hurts them the most, their egos and their wallets. This isn't about patriotism, it's about capitalism. The owners in the NFL are more interested in protecting their $14 billion revenue stream than the rights of their players to protest peacefully. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. For more great sports stories, subscribe to the Boston Globe. Season Ticket is a production of WBUR iLab and the Boston Globe. Thanks for listening. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.